This is WABF, and it's time now for the Conservative Watchdog Weekly News Review with Dr. Lou Campominosi of the Common Sense Campaign, an adjunct professor of political science at Spring Hill College. This program is paid for by Spriggs Enterprises, featuring the Shell gas stations in Daphne on 98 and in Malbus on 181 with a state-of-the-art car wash. And good morning, Dr. Lou.
Well, good morning to you. I think, these weeks just keep flying by. I mean, here we are. Christmas is, 6 days away? Hard to believe.
Yes, it is.
But, you know, I think it is just a factor of us getting old. The weeks just keep running by.
Mm-hmm.
Well, listen, folks, before I get started today, I told Lori that last week I had wanted to be able to play the theme song from Victory at Sea. Some of you all may remember Victory at Sea was an NBC documentary about the war at sea during World War II. Absolutely incredibly good, well done, 1951 to 52. So those of you who are old enough to remember it know what I'm talking about. For those of you who haven't a foggiest idea about it, go to Google it, Victory at Sea. You can find out more information about it and have an opportunity to watch it, okay? But the theme song is what I wanted to play last week when we were talking about Pearl Harbor, okay? So let's just go ahead and take a minute here, listen to the theme song, and see if it does for you what it does for me. I mean, this is a statement of America at its best. So the theme song from Victory at Sea.
There you go.
You know, it's stirring, I would argue, and it just captures the sense of how America was challenged to the very core of its existence and prevailed. Now, the hangover from that led to the American century, post-World War II, where we are now in the throes of a major crisis. And, you know, we've talked about this in any number of times. And yet, the argument that, you know, we've passed our time, we're in a state of decline, I just don't accept the premise behind that. I do think that there are aspects of the current situation that certainly could point in that direction. But in the end, we still have the basis for the greatness that we have had over the course of 200 plus years. And yet the challenges are real. And part of those challenges have to do with things that we were talking about last week, the continuing problems with the border. How is it possible to think that when Title 42 goes away in Wednesday, if it goes away, that you're going to have from 7,000 to 8,000 crossings every day to 18,000, and you think that the Border Patrol is already, you know, just absolutely overwhelmed, that the system is going to break. This is the whole argument between Howard and Cliven. What I can't remember their names exactly, but the idea was to break the system. And they are breaking the system on the border. It is an invasion. So the hope here is that the Republicans will actually do something about it. They keep talking about having, you know, the power of the purse to move things in the right direction. But one of the things that's going to hamper that is that if Shelby and these other Rhino Republicans pass this omnibus spending bill, Now, later this afternoon, we're going to ask our Common Sense Campaign folks and the Alabama Conservative Coalition folks to call Shelby and tell him, what in the hell do you think you're doing? If the Republicans come in and control the House, they control the power of the purse. That gives them leverage to stop some of the crazy stuff. Okay? It's that simple. Hopefully, we'll be able to sort some of those problems out. But you can't solve the problems in terms of using leverage you have with the power of the purse if Shelby and these people are going to just go ahead and confer to the Democrats a full year's budget right now. I mean, it's just outrageous. But there's nothing new about this. These questions about what's going on in terms of the border directly related to the ability for us to leverage the power we have with the purse to make the changes that are necessary. And the argument basically will be, look, Biden, you want XYZ programs? Then we want ABC programs first. Here's the deal. There you have it. But that goes away for a whole year without the power of the purse to leverage what the Republicans do. Yes, the Republicans can go in and investigate. Got it. They need to do it. This whole business with Twitter, more Twitter, you know, emails coming out showing the collusion between the FBI and other agencies of government. What in the hell is that all about? I mean, do you think that this guy Baker, I talked about him last week, the lawyer for the FBI, goes to Twitter, continues to do the bad things he did as an FBI lawyer, like approving a FISA warrant without any justification whatsoever to spy on the Trump campaign. The collusion was a lie about Russia. We all know that. He knew that. The FBI knew that the dossier was phony. Yet they did it anyway. They did it anyway. So here we are, Grassroots 101. What are we going to be able to do about that? Well, I think one of the things we can do is call Jerry Carl, our guy up there, and make sure he is as steely-eyed about this as the Jim Jordans and others like Jim Jordan are. We cannot let this stand. So as you know, we approach the fact when the Republicans are going to be in charge, we need to make sure that this is a full-scale effort to dig into this, find out what's going on, and punish those people who did all of this. I mean, the Constitution is hanging in the balance here. We can't have the FBI becoming a state police, a Stasi, or whatever. We can't do that and maintain the idea of a free country. And I would suggest to you that the best way to do this is to force these Republicans who now are in charge after January 3rd to do their damn job. Get to the bottom of it. Lay it out there. And then put so much pressure on it that the DOJ will actually, you know, find a way to break away from the idiocy of partisanship and just kind of put the scales of justice out there. Now, I recognize that's naive. I get it, okay? But you know what? If we don't have an idealistic approach to this, then we might as well just throw in the towel. Okay, we can't become as bad as these bad guys are. We need to clean it up and put it back into some normal order. In my view, it's that simple. Now, I've kind of, you know, carried on before I got a chance to really talk to you all about what I wanted to do today. I guess I've already done part of what I want to do today, kinda, sorta. But I do have a special guest coming on shortly. Senator Greg Albritton. He is the District 22 Senator, and that includes parts of North Baldwin, parts of Mobile counties. So he is one of the individuals that has a great deal to say about finance. He's the chair of the Senate Finance and Taxation Committee. He's a member of the Senate Education Committee, and he's also a member of the Health Committee too. So he's got a place to speak from in terms of issues that are very important to us. And I think that some of those issues we'll talk about today, such as the I-10 bridge. We've been talking about that for a long time. I've also asked him to talk about other points that we've been involved with, okay? Questions about gaming and lottery. What's going on with that? I want him to really talk about, you know, this whole question about stopping vaccine and mask mandates. I mean, those are important issues that we really need to get onto. And I do think that the public health system needs to be looked at and reformed. And I think that Senator Albritton can help us with that in terms of getting the public health director to become, you know, appointed by the governor and approved by the state Senate. That seems to be a better way to approach the kind of authority that the public health director has. He's appointed by the medical board. There is no accountability there. And I don't care how good this guy is, good, bad, or indifferent, it just doesn't matter. It's not a good way to do business, okay? And I think that we saw some of that during the pandemic where, you know, he has the authority to go ahead and do these lockdowns. Well, wonderful, okay? Lockdowns weren't the solution. And again, we're going through a lot of this, you know, post-Twitter debate where those scientists, virologists, who really knew what they were talking about, were silenced. And so I would urge you to take a quick look at what's going on with all that to make sure that we have the proper setup of government so that, yes, we can protect the public. I get that. That's not the issue. The issue is how in the world do you do something along these lines? And I think that if we start taking that into account, we can make sure that we don't have a repeat of what happened with that. Okay. Lori and I are working together right now. Okay. I have to write down...
Which one? I can't tell.
Okay. Write down Senator Albritton's number here. I sent him a little note a little while ago giving a heads up that he's supposed to be coming on, so...
You're listening to the Conservative Watchdog Weekly News Review here on WABF.
I'll just have to yank his chain. I have to give you a little background. Senator Albritton was a Navy guy, so I sent him my note this morning saying, hey, just making sure you're awake so that, you know, it's just the Marines taking care of their Navy boys, you know.
There you go.
We'll see what happens with that. but these the other agenda items that I want to talk to him about, this whole question about what's going on with the crisis of Alabama education. I mean, there's no reason for Alabama to be where it is. And I think that, you know, he's on that finance, the education finance fund, trust fund. And he'll be able to talk about some of these issues, and as I've already talked to him about it. So I've got a good agenda for him to talk to us about today. Assuming we get a chance to get him hooked up here.
Hello, Senator.
Lori's.
This is Lori DuBose. Are you prepared for Dr. Lou's talk show?
So okay, well, she's talking to him right now.
I do have him on the line. I said, are you prepared for Dr. Lou's show? He said, I don't know if I'm prepared, but I'm ready.
Okay.
Senator, good. You're on the air, sir.
Good morning, Senator.
All right.
Hey, how are you doing?
Doing well. How about you, Dr. Lou?
Well, I was doing good until you didn't call in at 2015 after. So, you know, I had to laugh at that, though. I told Lori I had sent you a little note just kind of teasing you about, you Navy boys need some help with things, you know. And then here it is. I have to have her call you. What's going on there, Greg? Good Lord.
Well, I saw the note that you sent, and it was disparaging the Navy, so I figured I just would make you call me.
Okay, all right. That's a good comeback. We'll take that. All right, so assuming that you're all prepared and ready to go, as Lori says.
Yes, sir.
Yes, sir. Yeah. Okay, we won't pursue these lines of thought. Okay, so let's kind of, you know, kick it off with a discussion about this whole business with the I-10 bridge, okay? I know that we've had our differences about this, but I think that we've come to see that there's more strength in working together on this rather than fighting over one aspect of your proposal for an expressway and Kevin Spriggs' proposal for the expressway. So let's just kind of take the 30,000 foot above the ground look and see where do you think the financing for this whole bridge thing stands, given what we've sort of characterized it as a house of cards financing. What's your sense of that?
Well, it's going to be a very expensive project, as outlined.
Yeah.
I think the cost is somewhere around $2.7 billion for the construction as planned.
Yeah.
And if we add in the anticipated inflation cost that's going to be on there, it's going to be more than that.
Right.
How are we going to get the money? As always, there's a combination between federal monies, contributions, bonds, different types of bonds, TIFL bonds and others, trying to get to that amount, and it'll be over a long period of time.
So the question of the bonds, I mean, you and I have talked about this, where the prison bond failed. They asked for $800 million and they got
I'm not going to let you get away with that statement.
Okay.
The bond was not a failure at all.
Well,
we've got the money to build the prisons.
Okay, but
what it fared it out was the point that the markets had changed dramatically from the time the plan was occurred and we went to market.
Okay, so but you,
the state was prepared for that.
Okay. So you asked for 800 and you got 520, right?
No, it was 735. I think was the total cost of things, and I think we got about 510, somewhere around there.
Okay, so we've asked for about $1 billion, if I'm not mistaken, on the bonds for the I-10 bridge, and I guess the point is, if those bonds come in at a lesser number, which, given the economy and the question about recession and higher, you know, interest rates and all the rest of that, it seems to me reasonable to think that the request for, you know, $1 billion for the bridge may very well not pan out. And if that's the case, then it seems like, you know, you've got financing problems right from the get-go. Beyond the fact that, you know, we're hoping that the Buttigieg $500 million mega grant comes through. We're hoping that we can get some support from TIFIA grants, which, as you and I were talking about this, they have increased from, you know, 33% of the project to 49%, which would be really good if we can get those things. And I realize that's a kind of a continuing negotiation with the feds and all like that. But it seems to me that, you know, given the lay of the land, both from a standpoint of politics up there, the Dems control this, And, you know, the question about possible recession, it seems like that the financing is on, you know, less secure grounds than what we would like to have. Is that a fair statement?
Well, you put a lot into that package there, Lou.
Okay. That's what happens when you talk to a professor. Look, okay.
Financing for this amount of money is tough. Mm-hmm. If it were easy to do, it'd be done by people that would, I don't know, would know better or couldn't do it or whatever. Anyway. The point is that this is a difficult project. It's a long-term project.
Yeah.
And we don't know how the circumstances are going to be when we get to that point of the bond market. We are facing more difficult economic strains. We are, and will continue for a while.
Yeah.
But to try to analyze how this might become a failure, I think, is a bit premature.
Okay, but I think the predication of failure is not because we want failure. It's the idea that, okay, what happens if the great bridge plan that Aldott has can't be financed? Is there a default position?
If that comes about, then that they'll hopefully the DOT, state and federal, will be able to work together to find the path to make something work.
Right.
We've got to have a Mobile River Bridge.
Okay.
That's important for the whole region, for the whole country, in fact. And I believe that the folks that are working on this are trying to find the best path to make this work.
Well, I agree with you. The motivation is there, and they're looking for the best path. But when we bring up a realistic assessment that if the financing falls apart and you can only get, you know, $1 billion, $1.5 billion, your plan for the expressway was about $1 billion. Our plan was a little less. But the point is, the expressway plan is a possibility that solves the problem, but it doesn't cost as much. But they don't seem to want to even, you know, talk about the possibility of, you know, not having enough money to fund the whole enchilada. I mean, so why not talk about it?
Well, it's like any other thing I would suggest, is when you have a plan, you make a plan. And the plan has got lots of nuances and changes and other issues that have to come in.
Right.
But you can only make the plan based on what you have on the factors and the methods that are available. I think they've done that. Now,
yeah.
If there's another plan that has to come up, we'll deal with that when it comes to it.
Okay.
But we can't start undermining or changing horses when we've been working on this now for 3 years or more.
Well, I mean, I agree in part with that, though, but it seems like I don't think it's undermining to have a reasonable expectation of, you know, what's the backup plan in case the financing isn't there. And I think that your plan, as we've discussed, has a better chance because, you know, as you've mentioned, the environmental impact statement is a much lighter footprint on your side of it. And because of that, one could argue that we could actually go forward. But I don't necessarily agree that it's undermining the plan simply by raising issues about, you know, real-world financial issues. But again, I think that, yeah, time will tell where we are with this. So you and I can have another conversation. Okay, we'll say
we've had this argument before.
Yes, yes, I get that.
And you beat me.
Well, I don't.
We're having to take where we are and move on.
Yeah. Okay. So we'll do July 4th as a booking date for you, and we'll talk more about it then. Okay. All right.
Again.
Yeah. So let me ask you this. So this question about infrastructure here in Baldwin County. I mean, I know that, that you've got parts of Baldwin County still in your district. So as we've discussed, questions about the priority of infrastructure projects here in Baldwin County, what is your sense of that, and are you as part of, you know, the group of legislators and officials, the county commissioners, are you all planning to get together to kind of sort through what the priorities are given budget limitations and things of that nature?
Those priorities and the developments that are necessary, that's in the purview principally of the county commission, and hopefully in cahoots with the state DOT. That's why there are state roads and county roads. And as far as what the needs are in the infrastructure, Baldwin County is a large county. It has lots of needs. It is the growingest county in the state.
Yeah.
And we have a lot of tourism coming in. The amount of use on the roads are much more extensive than what the population reflects.
Right. Well, they're talking about having like 500,000 people over the summer using the roads. Or maybe it's even more.
And whatever it is, it's going to increase, okay?
Yeah.
Well, and we've got plans already afoot for the Baldwin Beach Express. We've got plans connecting I-10 and I-65, which is a part of the BB2.
Yeah.
And we've got the major manufacturer coming into play north of Baymanette. That all of that needs to be dealt with. You've got, as we've discussed, the Mobile River Bridge. You've got Highway 31 that's going to increase in needs and traffic count, not to mention all the others that are going on. We've got to find, all of them will cost a lot of money, so we've got to find out which one we're going to build and when and how we're going to pay for it.
Well, I mean, since you're involved with financing, you know, is there a plan there in terms of what you all are looking at budget-wise to plus up some of the infrastructure money that goes out, not necessarily just for Baldwin County, but for other places too?
Did I lose you?
No, I asked you. I think you're ducking the question. That's what it is. Are there plans from the budget standpoint to plus up some of these projects, not just in Baldwin, but in other places that need it badly?
Plussing up, the construction cost is going to be a plus up.
Yeah, I get that.
I'm just trying to find a way that we can find a secure finance that can pay for them.
Right. I mean, so how does the state budget look to you at this juncture as you all are getting ready to, you know, start up in March?
Now you're getting into the 101, budgeting 101. First off, you know, we got two budgets.
Yes.
ETF, the Education Trust Fund, which is normally $8.2 billion of state money. In that fund, we do have a huge surplus at this year. That's an anomaly. It won't be there anymore.
Right.
But it's there for now. But that has nothing to do with roads and bridges or anything else. It's just just the education.
Okay, no, so I understand.
What I have is the general fund, which is about $2.7 billion, and we have a bit of a surplus this year, but some of that's already being spoken for.
Right.
We have construction already out in the state, adding up to about $3 billion. And all of that's going out, but that does not include what the infrastructure comes in.
Okay. So I guess what you're saying is at this juncture, these high-cost projects here in places like Baldwin County, you know, are going to have to be looked at very carefully to see how much money is going to be available. I use the term plus up. figuring that...
Now, you use that term.
Yes, I know that. Okay. That's okay. So let's take away plus up and just say, are there plans to include line items in the next budget to take care of some of these needs above and beyond what is in LDOT's already planned budget cycle?
What you're asking me is there room in the general fund?
Yes.
To direct toward roads and bridges in Baldwin County. Is that accurate?
Yes, but I would say broaden it to other counties so that we don't get into this north-south, hoorah, We want to be generous. But, I mean, we give Montgomery a whole lot of money, like $2 billion a year. So seems like we should be able to get some back, even though they didn't give us any of the oil spill money. But that's another issue, okay? So...
And that was a few years ago.
Yes, I know that. Okay.
That's done.
Okay.
And the fight was bloody, and we lost, okay?
I got you.
So, the next question is, we're going to be trying to find a way that we can ensure Baldwin County gets its needs resolved in a timely way that's doable.
Okay. And I realize that the politics of all this, it is tricky, and the other part is the economics of it. So I guess that the question, as you mentioned earlier, that I-10 bridge really is a national project as well as a state project, so perhaps things will, shake out in the right direction with that. So.
As a county local matter, too. I don't know how long you've been around these parts, but Baldwin County was a small rural population-wise up until I-10 was complete. Before that, all we had was the causeway and a few boats.
Right.
And when we didn't have reliable transportation to get to Mobile, the economic engine, Baldwin County never grew. It's only when we got I-10 is when we started growing. I think we hit the max of growth that I-10 can bring. Unless and until we start bringing this back together and getting more infrastructure to allow that commerce to continue.
Okay, well, I think, getting into the question of growth and all like that, that's certainly something that the county commission is looking at. They've got, I think they've paid for some consultants to handle some of these issues. But I do think that the question of growth is an issue that's touchy over here. So...
Well, sure. Yeah, of course it is.
So... How they handle that has yet to be seen, but in terms of the infrastructure question, it doesn't seem to be questionable at all that if you're going to have the tourist, come down here, you want to give them the very best reason to come here and not sit in traffic on 59 and blah blah blah. So I think it's in everyone's interest to try to find the kind of funding that's necessary to facilitate that. Am I going too far with that? The state has an interest in making sure that the golden goose down here doesn't start spitting out dead eggs or something like that. Greg?
Well, I have to agree with most of that statement, yes.
Okay, all right. So I'm saying you've just put your hat on to go fight for this money for this area, right? Okay.
I got the message. I understand.
Okay. All right. Let's talk about something near and dear to your heart. This whole business of gaming and the lottery. Your basic argument is that gaming is here, and we need to control it, unless we actually say. And again, we're back to this. Well, the last time they had a referendum on this, the citizens said no to it. But the question about whether or not the state Supreme Court, my understanding is the state Supreme Court said that church bingo is okay, but the bingo that you have in the casinos is not okay. They're electronic. So it seems to me that there is this legal issue that's still to be resolved. I know Riley sent his attorney general out to try to shut things down, and there was big issues with all that. So that's kind of still, you know, a running sore, don't you think?
You're making it too simple.
Okay. No, I realize the reality
first off,
is this happened.
The Supreme Court did not say that church bingo was okay. What it said was paper bingo was allowed under the law.
Right.
The other side argues that electronic bingo is valid in other places that have been allowed by local constitutional amendments. However, those decisions and everything else has nothing to do with the other gaming that's going on in the state.
Yeah, but I mean, the thing about it is that the enforcement of what the Supreme Court said was never there. They just let it go.
Oh, yeah, it's not going on. There's no enforcement happening.
Yeah, so, I mean, you're dealing with a situation. I mean, we complain about the Democrats on the border, but here we are doing the same thing. So I guess the argument that you're going to make is that the horse is out of the barn. We just need to get control of it so that the state can actually get some money out of the reality of the situation. Because I don't think anyone's going to, you know, fight to shut down all the gaming. I mean, do you?
I don't think it's possible. I think that's been tried, and it failed.
Yeah. So the reality is...
And in fact, not only did the shutting down fail, but the growth has become huge.
Yeah. So just tell us quickly your game plan for getting this under control, at least to the point where, you know, the state can make some money out of it since nothing's going to go away.
Well, the money is one part, but the real aspect of it is the state has got to control this industry. It is present. It is everywhere. It's on the phone. Anybody can plug in at any time. Not just to Las Vegas, and not just to the college games, and not just to the pro games.
Yeah.
But you can plug in on your phone with any casino that's operating in Alabama right now.
Yeah.
No control. No gain from it. We suffer the problems that gaming brings to society already. But we don't have the resources nor the controls to restrict that or to control it or to deal with it.
Well, I know from when I was living on the Gulf Coast and I was the, the dean of Tulane's Gulf Coast campus. We had a program to work with the casinos, doing their management programs and things like that. But the reality was the casinos just ate into the ability to find workers in other industries. I mean, it really was an issue. And I think that, you know, we haven't seen that yet because I think, you know, the gambling thing is here is pretty much, you know, limited. But I do think that there are issues along those lines, aside from the moral questions and the whole idea of gambling itself, okay? And I mean, I think that, you know, you look at those casinos in Mississippi, and you just see a lot of old people, and again, I am an old person too, so I can say it, just, you know, pulling the cha-ching on it. It's just, it's kind of sad. But I do think that, you know, where you're going with this makes sense to try to avoid the...
Wait a minute. Say that again.
Yeah,
what did you say?
It makes sense. Can you believe I said it?
I have him on recording saying
that's
that.
That's right. It's recording, too. Well, I mean, you know, from a realistic standpoint, it's here. There's no sense in letting it just run amok. I think that it makes sense. So talk to us quickly about the lottery, too. How does this all fit together? Because we keep hearing people say, well, don't worry about gambling. Let's just do the lottery. That's a different issue. What's your sense of that?
You may think it's a different issue, but a lottery is not going to be able to pass because it's going to affect and afflict all the other gambling operators.
Yeah.
So they're not going to allow the lottery to pass unless there's some protections for them. Mm-hmm. Or something involved that they can be assured that they're okay. that's one aspect. It's not passable right now because of how Alabama has done.
Okay.
Now, the other side of the coin, no pun intended maybe, is that the lottery doesn't help Alabama. It doesn't produce enough revenue. And it's a declining revenue once it starts. So it's not. It'll just be expanding gaming to every hamlet, street corner, and 7-Eleven without much benefit or gain to the state.
Okay. Well, I mean, I think, you know, they always sell the lottery on the basis of it's going to go to education, which they said that in Louisiana. And, of course, all they did was they got the lottery money, and then they just evened it out. They didn't plus up education with that. So
I back up for a minute. You didn't listen to me before. We haven't. Did you hear the numbers between ETF and the general fund?
Oh yes.
Do you
yes.
hear how much of an excess we have in the ETF?
Yes, $8 billion.
Why? If we have all that, why would we put more money into the education?
Well, because the education establishment has convinced people that more money equals better education, which we know is BS, okay, as we've seen from the results. They've had four of the biggest budgets they've had in the last 4 years, and yet we were in 2019 until now, we were 52nd in math and 48th in ELA. So more money doesn't necessarily mean it, but that's how they sell it, Greg. You know that as well as I do.
Well, who's they? I mean, if we're going to do this, we need to be upfront with the people on the uses and the purposes. And frankly, at this juncture, I can't tell you that the ETF needs more money.
Well, I mean,
we need more money into mental health. We need more money in police enforcement. We need more money in other matters rather than education.
I don't disagree with you with that. All I'm saying, though, that education seems to be the easiest hook to get people to support it. So if it comes to a referendum, then that's what they're going to do. Now, I don't disagree with you that the Education Trust Fund has more money than it needs. I mean, and especially when you look at, you know, the bang for your buck, it is BS, okay? Which kind of leads me to the next question, okay? This whole crisis... Another question. Can you believe it? Okay. The crisis of Alabama education. Okay. If money isn't the issue, then in your view, and you know, you're on the Finance Education Committee. So what is the true nature of why we are where we are in education? What's your sense of that? I mean, I can answer it for you, but I want to give you a chance. No, I'm not going to answer it. Tell us your sense of it.
Well, first off, understand, the ETF's got another chairman, and the last thing I need to do is cross swords or interfere.
Okay.
However, as far as our education system is concerned, the biggest problem we got is mamas and daddies, or the lack thereof.
Okay.
The mamas and daddies are involved in the children's lives and in the school system.
Okay.
That, in my mind, is the biggest problem.
Okay, and I don't disagree in principle with you, but as you and I have, you know, talked about this, if you looked at our standing in the nation in 2010, before we adopted Common Core, we were 25th, okay? The mamas and daddies problem 10 years ago was there. And yet, all kids, crossing ratio and social...
Not to the same degree that we have it at this point.
It may be a different degree. I don't disagree with that. But I'm saying the problem was there, and yet we were able to find a way through the education, the ARI, the Alabama Reading Institute, that whole program, it really did work. And so I kind of take us back to basics here and say that if we were doing well with the Alabama standards in 2010, why did we ever get rid of them? And that's the problem now, is that it is Common Core, and we bottomed out at like I said, 52nd in math and 48th in ELA. And
your points are well made.
Yeah. So is it possible that, and here again, you know, there have been bills to replace Common Core. Is it possible for you to become an ally in getting rid of Common Core as a you know, kind of a no-brainer? We've been doing this for all these years, and it ain't working, and it ain't getting better, and we're throwing more money, good money, at a bad product. Is that sellable in your circle of influence up there?
Well,
roll your sleeves up.
I agree with you that we need our standards. I agree that we need to be able to compete in the nation. But I also agree that the Common Core methodologies and such that they've adopted are not helpful to our system.
Okay, so I take that as a yes. You are going to be a fighter against Common Core, huh? Okay. All right, so look, I'll let you off the hook a little bit on that, okay? But,
okay.
All right, indoctrination is another part of this problem, okay? And I know that I put you in touch with one of the gurus of indoctrination, Mike Parsons, and I think that the sooner you all get together and let him take you through what he's found out about the American School Counselors Association standards that they are indoctrinating the kids are. It's all woke stuff, okay? I think that the more our legislators get to see about this, the quicker they will come to realize that we need to end this, because you're just putting out another generation of little AOCs, and the colleges have been doing that for a long time, but now it's percolating down into the pre-K through, you know, 12 school system. So I think that hopefully we will be delivering these messages, but I do think that we need sponsors for some pieces of legislation that we had last year that will be coming forward this year.
Lou, your principles are accurate. I don't have an argument on the principle.
Okay.
Most often where we get into a problem here, you and I, is the methodologies.
Mm-hmm.
By that I mean what we have here is a money problem. Yeah, I mentioned that the ETF of $8 billion and such, that's state money. But the ETF spends closer to about $19 billion. That's maybe a slight exaggeration, but you get the idea there.
Right.
If we start cutting off all of these alphabets that come to us from the feds, Common Core is one of them, then the monies that is going to be cut off.
Right.
That's not monies. That's monies going to four-year colleges, two-year colleges, the K through 12, and even the pre-K.
Okay.
That will be involved federal monies that will be lost.
Right. I get that. Here, our argument basically is you're talking about 10% of the state budget. Okay. And
I'm not arguing for it.
No, I understand that.
Why we have the problem
right. With
this is because it is the money that chase that goes on within the institutions.
But you see, I guess the argument that we would make is that we can absorb the 10% that we'll lose out if we get rid of Common Core. I think that as a starting point, and you're right, I mean, you know, we don't want to, you know, decimate all these programs, but on the other hand, can we continue to, you know, produce the kind of outcomes where the kids are not learning and they're becoming indoctrinated with all this left-wing malarkey. You know, I shouldn't say malarkey. It's just, it's crap, okay? That's all it is. So, I think
that...
Careful
with your language. This is an adult show.
Okay, that's true. Laurie, but Laurie's got her finger on that button because I've gotten close a couple of times, so... I got to watch what I say.
Yes.
But I think it's not only in the national interest to get rid of this, because all this woke stuff that we've seen and the BLM and Antifa, all of these things are all part and parcel of the same thing. That's the root cause of part of this. So it seems like if our aim is to, you know, produce better educated kids, then why don't we just go back to what we were doing before and, you know, just... absorb what's necessary given the fact that the ETF does have extra money. But I don't deny that you've got 19 million billion others that are coming in. We have to just scientifically, you know, cut that stuff out where we can. And I guess that's something that I would argue should be done. So let's kind of put that on the hopper and we'll come back to it. Okay, I've got 4 minutes. I'm getting the high sign. Okay, so let's quickly talk about vaccine mandates and mask mandates. But before we talk about that, this argument that the public health service, I mean, the public health system should have a director, in our view, that is appointed by the governor and approved by you guys in the Senate. Is that something that you can support?
I've supported that previously.
Okay.
We've had a couple of bills in the last couple of years dealing with that matter. I've supported them.
Okay. My understanding is that they kind of died away after the pandemic, you know, the lockdowns went away and everybody kind of got back to normal. Is that something, though, that you can bring back up? And because... conceptually, it doesn't make sense for the public health director to have so much power. I mean, it's just a given.
I do not believe that a medical officer should have authority to initiate martial law.
Yeah. Well, he does. So, I mean, look, I know there's 8 million things that you all have to do, but it seems to me that handling this is something that should be done, and I mean, if the next pandemic comes around, I mean, given what we've learned about this one, and how botched up it was, and how places like Florida didn't do as much lockdown as other places, I mean, I don't think South Dakota locked down at all. I recognize it's a small state, but nevertheless, it seems to me that we should be able to control our own destiny about this without having a medical doctor who essentially in this particular point ends up becoming a tool of the CDC, which, as we know, is not to be trusted. So is this something that you could actually, you know, sink your teeth into and pull people into?
Well, look, I've got my hands full with several different things, but that's something that I'm interested in and have supported and will continue to support.
Okay, so maybe we can just kind of talk about who you think up there in the Senate would be someone we could talk to that might push this along further. What do you think?
Well, I'm not going to put anybody's name out there.
When we talk. Off the record.
That's up to them, for them to decide.
Okay. But I guess what we're trying to do is find those individuals who may be, you know, ready to move in this direction. Laurie has a comment.
See who sponsored and introduced the first bill that didn't make it.
The other, yeah.
Right.
Well, that's a good point Laurie makes. Go back and see who sponsored the first bills. I don't remember off the top of my head. But, all right, Greg, it looks like I've got 2 minutes to go, so.
My clock shows 30 seconds.
You have 2 minutes to apologize for me.
Oh, my gosh.
To me, not for me, to me.
No, okay, I promised that I would not throw you curveballs, and I think the curveball wasn't too curvy.
He threw them right back at you.
He
Thank
did
you,
throw
Senator.
Back, so, yeah. You have to take ownership of that too.
That's good.
It was
all
fun. Right. It was quite fun. I enjoy the give and take.
Okay.
It causes thoughts not only between us and among us, but from everybody else that listens. These things are issues. They're difficult, and you can't just slap jelly on it and go. It takes more hard work to fix.
Yeah, I don't disagree with that. I think that, you know, we will be working together and see what we can do on some of these issues, particularly the I-10 bridge, which we want done, and we want it done in the right way. Okay?
Okay.
All right.
Thanks, buddy.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it. Senator Greg Allbritton.
Good night.
All righty.
Thank you, sir.
Bye-bye. Well, Lori, that went fast.
Very informative.
Well, I hope so. I hope that people get something out of it. And what we will do through the Alabama Conservative Coalition and the Common Sense Campaign is to bring these issues up and produce some engagement at our lower levels so that we can, you know, make some noise that people will hear. Again, the model for this is health freedom with what Stephanie Dernan has done. She has gotten their attention, and we need to be able to replicate that on these issues. So, all right, folks. Well, let's see. By next Monday, it is the 26th. Christmas will have come and gone. Lori and I are trying to figure out if we're going to be working on
They'll just
the
have to stay tuned, won't they?
So stay tuned.
Okay.
All right. Y'all have a wonderful Christmas. Take care. Bye.
Thank you, Dr. Lou. You've been listening to the Conservative Watchdog Weekly News Review with Dr. Lou Campominosi. This program is brought to you by Spriggs Enterprises, as well as an anonymous donor. Spriggs Enterprises consists of the Shell gas stations in Daphne on 98 and in Malbus on 181 with a state-of-the-art car wash. If you missed part of this program, you can listen to it later. It will be posted at WABF1480.com. Now resuming regular programming.